This show was first broadcast on Free FM, Hamilton, New Zealand's community access media organisation. For more information on our lineup of shows and the role we play in the media, visit freefm.org.nz.
This program is sponsored by New Zealand Bridge, sponsors of Grassroots Bridge across the nation.
Welcome to the Bridge Zone. You're at the table with Barry and Mariana. We're heading into our long weekend, Barry, and we've got quite a few tournaments happening over the Mutu.
There's a lot going on and a lot of entries, Mariana.
Tauranga Anniversary Weekend, the Restricted Open has got 17 pairs, and the Open has got 34 pairs.
And in the teams, always seems to be more popular than anything, they've got 28 teams. So that's 56 pairs, pretty good numbers.
5A Otago Festival pairs, got 16 tables.
And then top of the South, Robin Young teams, in honour of Robin Young, they've got 16 teams entered for that.
Whanganui Picnic pairs, they've got 40 pairs entered. Lovely.
Okay.
We were speaking with Nicole Cook last week, and we've still got some information about Nicole herself and the IB score. So we're going to play another clip for that, and we're still going with the competition, and we will release what the secret key for this week is at the end of the show.
Now, we haven't forgotten, by the way. We are hoping to work our way around the regions. We started with Waikato Bays because, well, that was closest. So, you know, we would like to talk to the chairperson of all of the provinces. If you want your province to be next, let us know who your chairperson is and their number, and we'll give them a call.
BridgeZoneShuffle@gmail.com. We continue our chat with Nicole Barclay from IBE Score. And don't forget, we're still running the competition. All you need to do is go to their website, ibescore.com, and enter your name into the Bridge Zone competition that we're sharing to go into the draw for Zia Mahmood's latest book, Bridge, A Love Affair. The key will be shared at the end of this program. Enjoy. Tell me, does it have a program for rubber bridge scoring?
The answer is yes. It's the sister product we have. This product is, I've licensed it effectively and rebranded it to make a product that we sell to the world. But the original product has a rubber option, yes.
Barry would love that. He just loves rubber bridge. Can't wait to play it at any time.
Rubber bridge is a great way for putting money on the line or points on the line to improve your declarer play. I completely agree with the whole concept of put your kind of name and your money on the line. To... Yeah. Is that why you like rubber bridge, Barry?
I'm not a fan, really. So there you go. That's why Mariana's bringing it up. She does it every opportunity. Anyway.
Well, that's kind of interesting because you've got pretty fine and good declarer play, so maybe it's boring for you. If a student is kind of looking to improve their bridge, rubber bridge and putting some money to it is a good way to improve your declarer play, in my opinion, and your defence.
Some of our listeners might be thinking, why would this program have any advantage for them? But we have some people that play at a golf club, and they sometimes get up to 5, 6, 7 tables, and they just pen and pencil, you know, they don't have any movements. You just sit down and you play that particular pair for the entire event, but you could still score it.
If you want to do anything bridge, none of the whole drama of movements, none of the complications of where boards need to go when needs to happen. You can literally go to our website, get yourself a game code, watch the videos and give it a go. The website is ibescore.com. And the I stands for international, the B stands for bridge, the E stands for excellence. So our company is International Bridge Excellence Limited. ibescore.com.
Nice.
It's available in the Play Store and the Apple Store and then, to download the app.
Well, we're a bit lucky then because we had a face-to-face version. We had two tables just to give it a go, and probably after the second board, people were familiar with it. It wasn't too bad.
It's interesting what Nicole says, that people, you know, they just don't like change of any sort. You know, it does come a point where you have to change. Otherwise, we'd still be having spoken bidding and writing on bits of paper.
Nicole, we had a tournament last year and we had a power cut, and things are starting to get a little bit dicey towards the end. but we managed to get power and da 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 da. This one, could it be used as backup as well? So how do you get your boards into your program?
So there's two ways you can do it. We have a companion app that offers the extras. So it adds the boards in. It allows you to set up a player database. It allows you to customize what you allow the players to see during the sessions and after the sessions. So that's one way. Or depending what services you allow on your phone, you can email the deal file to yourself, save it into your phone, and then you can just add it using the app. So you have a director key, which gives you extra features, and that's how a director slash scorer can create a new game, edit settings, add a deal file. They can correct results if players have made a mistake. They can adjust a board. They can split a board if players play it three times and then misboard it. And if a director makes a ruling where they give us a weighted adjustment, you can put that in. There's lots of different options, all of which are done via the telephone.
So if people wanted more information about it, how do they get a hold of you?
Please just send us an email from the app. Well, in fact, you can even download the app. And if you click on the help or the director button, that'll take you to a browser page and you can click and send us a WhatsApp as well.
Very good.
Interesting to see what sort of response you get. But I mean, you're right. A lot of people are just going to say, sounds too hard. I don't want to change from what I've got. There will be clubs that need to look at something different for their scoring package. It might only be a matter of time before you start hearing from New Zealand bridge clubs, even if that's not what you're looking for.
So the beauty of our product is that I kind of think of our strategy a bit like Zoom in the early days of COVID. I needed a way to talk to the bridge players that needed help and the people who needed help to talk to their players. And literally what I would do is I downloaded Zoom and then I Googled, how do I do this? And so we are trying to set our company up that way. So when clubs are ready or need to make a change, they can download the app, find us, and they can ask questions to us or via Google. And a bit of luck, they'll get everything they need to move forward at the pace they're ready to make.
I see an opportunity to use it at the beginner lessons. You know, we normally give them our pre-dealt hands and then they walk away with material. But they always forget about what they played and which board they do. They have eight boards. It would be great if they had that information on their phones and when they walked out the door, they could look at what the score was and remember it and have a look at the cards. I think that would be a good extension for what we currently have.
For sure. That is good. Basically, they walk out the door after those boards are played and they're gone forever.
And you can expand on that because what you can do is, in the app, you have the option to add the auctions. What I do with some of the students we have is we set up an extra table and we put in a model answer. So we're basically a player playing and we put in how the bidding should go and what the result should be. So we might put in one heart, three hearts, four hearts as the bidding and they can see that that's the auction. If you've got, say, five tables of students and they've all put in 140, 140, 140, and they see 1420, which is the model answer, then they can click on that and see what the auction could have and should have been. So it's quite a nice teacher interaction as well. You can see what they've put and they can go back and review it. And my experience with students, certainly now, I don't know if it was the same, I wasn't a teacher before, but my experience is that students are getting younger and smarter. They're looking for information and they can digest it themselves. Mm-hmm. If you put it there, they can take it if they need it and not if they don't. So putting too much information is not a problem if it's in a format that they can digest at their own pace.
That sounds brilliant.
I've got another question and it's not to do with that. Nicole, you've had a pretty successful bridge playing career in England, played in the English women's team I don't know how many times. What's on the horizon for Nicole Cook as far as international bridge goes?
That's a fantastic question. Perhaps you can talk to me again in a year or two. What I can say is that I've had 10, 12, I don't want to count now, how many years as a director. My playing has always taken a second seat to my directing career. now I'm all about helping clubs do cool things in the future. And I think being back in New Zealand, my desire to play bridge has been refreshed, re-energized. And I think with a bit of luck, you might see me again back on the international arena in the next few years. I'm hoping to try again. On that subject, Barry, I heard there's we're moving into a different area now. I've always thought there was a 100 A point commitment in order to play for a country. And when you live in a different country, it's quite hard to represent your country. But I heard recently that maybe that's not always the case, that they do waive when that suits their purpose. So maybe I might get to represent my own country again one day. I say again, I've never represented my country.
Yeah, okay. Look, what does seem like...
You went there.
The Bridge Zone is known to be asking the hard questions and giving the hard answers.
Might be another topic.
There are people representing different countries that don't live there. We all know that, as long as they don't trial to represent another country within the last couple of years. Countries seem to be much more accepting of players, you know, living outside the country and still wanting to represent their own country. So, and the 100 A point rule, or whatever it is, obviously not everybody has A points, but in New Zealand it's A points. You're meant to have a partner that you've played events with 100 A points, but that seems to get waived relatively frequently these days. I don't know, you might be able to come back and play in the Thames Festival and something else, and that'll be enough.
Well, for me, to be fair, for me that was inspiring. Because I don't live in New Zealand, but nor do I want to represent the country that's not my own. So it's always been a bit of a dilemma for me. I can't necessarily move back here just to play bridge, but nor do I choose to represent a country that's not my own. So to be fair, I have never tried to play for New Zealand, but there are international tournaments I can play. There are things that I can do. My interest is women's bridge because I am a woman and I believe that I would like to play as a woman. It's the competition that I wish to represent my country in. Barriers at the moment are too high.
Online bridge has been a bit of a godsend for that sort of thing because there are some pretty major events in New Zealand that are held online that you could play in. And these are big A-point events. You wouldn't have to play too many of those with the same partner to be, I'm not a selector, but you wouldn't have to play too many of those before you built up some sort of partnership history that would enable you to put your name forward.
And that excites me as an opportunity, and I hope it excites some people who are starting to learn to play bridge, because some people like to play socially, but some people love to do the best they can at the thing they take on. And so if that really is a realistic opportunity for people, then I think it really opens the competitive world of women's bridge to all Kiwis, and I'm quite excited to be part of that future. So fingers crossed.
And we'll return with the final segment of our discussion held with Nicole Barclay next week.
Coming up next, we're heading off to the courthouse. Director, please.
How can I help?
Judge Julie presiding.
G'day, we're at the courthouse with Judge Julie. Weekly hello.
Hello, everyone.
You ever been to an auction, Julie, and not known when the bidding stopped?
Are you talking real estate or bridge?
We're talking about a bridge auction, of course, folks. We're going to have North be the opener for a change. So North opens one heart and East doubles.
Yep.
South bids two hearts, West bids two spades. North now bids four hearts.
Yeah.
And East bids four spades. We've all been here before. South passes, West passes. Now it's up to North to either double or bid or pass, I guess.
Yep.
But what they're thinking about that. South leads. It's all happening, Julie. There's a whole lot of things gone wrong here.
So at the moment, the biggest thing that's gone wrong is South's lead.
Yeah.
Right? So in the auction, it is not over. So a card exposed or led during the auction. If it is a single card or on a rank or any card prematurely led, offender's partner must pass when next it is their turn to call. Law 72C will cover what happens next here when a pass damages a non-offending side. So there might be more stuff happening. So that card is on the table and now North must pass.
Must pass? What happens if he says, but I haven't finished, I was going to do something?
They're going to do something. We'll go back at the end of the play and see whether that's to the non-offending side's advantage or not. And we will adjust accordingly. There's going to be no win for North-South here.
Uh-huh.
I can understand that. Otherwise, if you really, really didn't want partner to bid, you could just lead something out of turn.
Yeah, that's right. And that is, as I said before, the law book finds everyone guilty before they're innocent, because there are things that can happen that people can do deliberately, and it's really difficult for the director to tell, and the director can't go around accusing some people of cheating and some people of not cheating based on how he feels about those people, or she feels about those people. So the law book is really kind to directors and just assumes everyone's just guilty and makes the rules accordingly. Then if things are different, and I mean, it's North's partner. If North's not happy with their partner, they can have a discussion with their partner at some point. But if the other side have got nothing to do with this, and South has done something that is reckless and has led out of turn. So now, this is...
So if the contract was for space, their partner would be on lead, is what you're saying anyway.
But that's not relevant, because at this point, that card that South has played, out of turn, will be a major penalty card. So when we get to the next point of the auction where North is on lead, South has a major penalty card in front of them, and there will be lead penalties that can be applied.
Wow.
South East-West will not get the option of accepting or not accepting the lead out of turn, because the lead was made during the auction. All right, so it is not a lead out of turn. It is a premature lead in the middle of the auction, and that's got some different ramifications. But not many.
Well, it is from the wrong hand as well. If they go back to four spades, it's actually their partner who should be on lead.
Well, the partner is on lead when it is four spades.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Okay. Yeah. The South player has a major penalty card in front of them. North will be on lead because North is on lead against four spades once they've passed, which they have to do. And now the clearer, West, can demand or forbid the lead of the suit or the card that's on the table, or they can have North lead what they like or whatever. The options which are clearly there for major penalty cards. Law 50D, if anyone is interested in looking it up in their law book. And I am reading from Law 24 at the moment.
Right. So you can't say, crap, and put it back in your hand.
No, you can't. If a card's dropped on the table, so it's unintended, there are some different things that may happen depending on what the size of the card is and whether it was played deliberately or not deliberately. But there are certainly things that may well happen when someone manages to put a card on the table when the auction is still in progress.
Okay, now, we all know that directors, you know, they have a pretty easy life. You said earlier that at the end of the hand, if the director comes back and finds out that the person who led out a turn and stopped their partner from taking any further part in the auction...
If someone said to me it was deliberate, there are going to be a lot of penalties thrown around here. But in general, it is incredibly rare. I have once had someone who did something that was not good and told me that they had deliberately done it. The person that's led here is probably just thinking about whether it's a good night for swimming tonight because we're still at 29 degrees, or is that thunderstorm going to come along and I need to get my washing in? Who knows what planet they're actually on at this point? When we do things that are terribly wrong, normally it's because we are just somewhere else in the universe.
Yeah, but what I want to know is when the director gets called back to decide whether stopping their partner from bidding worked out well for them or not.
Yeah.
I mean, how the heck is the director ever going to figure out what...
Okay, well, first of all, for a start, as you just said, I wanted to bid. I was just about to do something and I didn't. So, for a start, you've got the comments that are made at the time is one of the ways of knowing. And Law 72C is if the director determines that an offender could have been aware at the time of the irregularity. So if South could have been aware that it could damage the non-offending side, so if South could have been aware that by playing that card that they stopped their partner from making a bad bid or a bad call, then the director may award an adjusted score. The offending sides in general are not allowed to gain an advantage through an irregularity, and Law 72C stops them doing that. So if North would clearly have gone on and bid five hearts and they state something pretty much to that effect, and five hearts would have been one off and four spades would have gone off, then guess what the director's going to rule will happen when they get back to
five the hearts, one off. They're going to rule five hearts, one off, I guess.
Yeah, that's right. Five hearts, one off.
And if they were thinking of doubling and four spades made, then...
I mean, there's some things here. They might have been in a forcing pass situation. Maybe North was going to have to bid. There might be things in their system that make it clear about what's going on. But one thing I like to make really, really clear is it is a very, very, very rare case where people do something deliberately here to get a certain outcome. And one of the things that we get asked about often is about people doing things deliberately. And most people, it is just because they're having a dopey moment. It is not because they're trying to do something very untoward or cheating or any of those things. Yeah. Those things do not happen very often at all.
I don't think in this particular case, I don't think there was any suggestion there was anything.
That's right. And it's really important that still, we are aware.
The rules still apply as if they did.
That's what I said. Law assumes you're guilty, even if it's just because you're having all your snooze.
Okay. Imagine if that was the first hand of the session.
That's quite a likely time for it to happen, actually. The first and last hand of any match or session, you should be really cautious about what you do. They are well known to be the things where things go wrong.
Tip of the day, Mariana. First board and last board. Watch out for them.
First board and last board. Brilliant. Alrighty, we'll see you over in Tauranga this weekend, will we?
No, Patrick plays Scrabble this weekend, 2-day Scrabble tournament in Auckland. And it is one of the few tournaments generally that he plays. We do a lot of directing or end up with a lot of commitments for playing where we don't play many Scrabble tournaments. So Scrabble this weekend, not bridge.
Option.
Does that mean you've been spending time on the loo reading the Scrabble word book?
Okay, well, thanks for that. We'll catch you next week.
Okay, have a good week.
I've got a question today for you. This will get you thinking, Barry. When you're playing an opposition open one club and your partner bids one heart, and then the opposition shows one spade and you've got 10 points and three hearts, what's the best way to show your support? Cupid, jump. How can you show, partner, I've got three card support and I've got 10 points? What's your suggestions? So,
once again, same old, same old. It depends what your partnership agreement is.
Yep.
A really good idea to have one. Most people would play that two hearts would probably show 6 to 9 points and three hearts, maybe four. Some people, if they've got four hearts and a hand like that, they like to jump to three hearts saying, well, we've got nine hearts between us. Let's make life as difficult as we can for these people by taking up a whole lot of space and hope that we're safe because we've got a lot of trumps. But that means that when you've got a hand, like you said, with 10 points and three hearts or even four hearts, you need another bid. So a lot of people will play what they call an unassuming cubit. So that means you cubit the opponent's suit. One club, you bid two clubs showing heart support and 10 plus points. I mean, you might have 15 points. I don't know what the others are bidding on, probably fresh air, but it doesn't matter. We're showing 10 plus points. So if your partner has got just a minimum one heart overcall, they're just going to bid two heart and hope that bidding stops. They've got something extra, they'll either jump to four hearts or maybe they'll make a game try. Maybe they'll bid three hearts or maybe they'll bid some other suit, whatever they like. And you have got another cubit here. You've got two spades available. A lot of people would play, if it goes one club, one heart, one spade, that actually shows five spades because they could have made a double, a takeout double showing just four spades.
Right.
People have lots of different ways of playing this, by the way. Some people will play a double there, just says they haven't got four spades, but they've got six plus points and they want to bid something. One spade only shows four plus. That's a really good reason for jumping to three hearts with four hearts because they may not have sorted out whether they've got a spade fit or not yet. You can take up a whole lot of space and make it tricky for them. You know, that's a good reason for having that preemptive raise available. But it also means that when they bid one spade, particularly if it shows five, you really don't want to suggest that you want to play there. So two spades probably is not a natural bid there either. Some people play the two club bid says I've got 10 plus points with three hearts and two spades says I've got 10 plus points and four hearts. So two clubs shows three hearts, two spades shows four hearts and both of them show 10 plus points. I don't know whether I want to have a special bid just to show one more heart there actually. It depends whether your partnership wants to go into that much detail. Personally, I'm too lazy, Mariana, as you know.
Could it be that if you bid two spades that you're slightly stronger because I've got the choice of queuing either clubs or spades?
I guess that makes sense because obviously if you bid two spades and partner wants to sign off, they have to go to the three level.
Yeah.
Whereas if you bid two clubs, they can just sign off in two. And maybe because of that, maybe it does suggest that you want an extra heart to be going to the three level. Maybe it does make some sense to have two spades is showing, maybe a bit stronger, and usually four hearts.
Right. But
partners have a habit of overcalling one heart on not very much sometimes. Give partner king, queen, jack to five or six hearts. They want to get in there, and you probably don't want to discourage that. So we don't really want to be racing off to the three level unnecessarily.
People go, the law of total trick. Larry Cohen, come in spinner. Sometimes yes, sometimes not. Vulnerability, I guess.
Yeah, I'm sure when Marty and Larry invented law of total tricks, they have lots of variations on the theme. It's not quite as straightforward as every time you got four hearts, you jump to the three level. If you've got a balanced hand, they're a bit reluctant to do that.
Remind me again, what was Julie's tip of the week?
Julie's tip of the week was, watch out for the first board and the last board. More things go wrong on the first board of an event and the last board of an event than all the ones in between.
Ah, yeah.
After we finished her segment and you'd stopped recording, she came up with another tip as well. Can you remember what that was?
If things go wrong, call the director.
Absolutely. If things go wrong and you don't call the director, don't go crying to Judge Julie, I think is probably the other thing. She didn't actually say that, but I think that's what she meant.
Yeah.
Are you playing any bridge during the week, Mariana, to get ready for Saturday?
Not at this stage.
You might be a bit rusty. Watch out for that first board.
I'll be particularly...
You might forget which ones are the spades. Restricted open pairs on the first day, and then you're playing in the open teams.
And then the Swiss on the Monday.
You're going to be exhausted by Tuesday.
I will be. Don't know how I'm going to manage that, but anyway, we'll give it a crack, Nigel. Just before we go, who's your pick? Have a look at the teams. Who's your pick? And if you've got any idea, send us your thoughts. Bridgestoneshuffle@gmail.com. Is the Weir team in?
The Weir team is in. So Mariana is always looking out for the Weir team. Michael Weir, Grant Jarvis, Martin Reed, and Peter Newell. Pretty strong team. They'll be one of the favourites.
See, Leon's coming up playing with Gao and the Yules. You've got to put a dollar each way on that.
So that's Leon Mayer, Mariana's talking about. Gao Tislevol playing with Ken and Kathy Yule.
Simpsons and the Fishers,
Barrington is there with Graham Tufnell all the way from Christchurch, playing with Pam Livingston, Hermit, and Malcolm Mayer. Pretty strong team. It's turning into a really strong event. What about the pairs, Marianne? Who are you picking? The open pairs, Jack James and Wayne Burrows. They've won a lot of tournaments around the Central Districts. How will they go in Tauranga, do you think?
It's hard to say, isn't it?
Martin Reed and Peter Newell are in the pairs, and Michael Weir and Grant Jarvis, Gao Tislevol and Leon Mayer, Pam Livingston, Malcolm Mayer. It's a star-studded field, Blair and Liz Fisher.
Gina and Christine Gibbons, Richard Solomon, Anna Colmer, they had some good results.
Sam and Joe Simpson, great field. It's pretty hard to pick, isn't it?
It is. What a great tournament that's going to be. And the secret word for the competition, it is rubber.
And we'll be back next week with all the results.
Catch you on the weekend. See you later.
Bye for now.
New Zealand Bridge, sponsoring bridge from beginner to international, nationwide.
For more episodes, use the accessmedia.nz app for iOS and Android devices, or subscribe to this podcast via Spotify, iHeartRadio, or Apple Podcasts. This free FM podcast was brought to you with support from New Zealand On Air.